the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Good evening, friends and enemies. Welcome to a very special, I guess this is the first ever Canadian Bitcoiners American midterm election coverage special Amazon Prime Tuesday night vote. My name is Joey. Len is here too. We brought a couple Quimby. Of our, yeah, we got a couple of our friends here as well.
Quimby's got my vote.
Let's bring him in one at a time. We'll start with friend of the show. He's a frequent guest. I think he's been on two or three times. Dean Linden's here. Dean, tell people who you are, where you are, and who you think is going to win.
So I'm actually on the ground here in the United States of America reporting live. So if there's fires that break out behind me while I'm talking, you'll know that I'm legit. I'm in Seattle, Washington, and I'm the co-founder and managing partner of Cypress Hills Partners.
Rock on, rock on. Next up, Brandon's not in his seat, so Julian's up next. Julian, welcome back. You've been on the show before, too. Tell people who you are and who you think is going to win.
What's up? I'm Julian. I make YouTube videos, TikToks, all about Bitcoin. And my money's on a couple of these Republican toss-up races, Arizona, Nevada. I guess we'll get all into that in a little bit.
We will for sure. We will for sure. Welcome to the program. And then finally, some guy who just brought a prop in here, it looks like.
What's going on there?
I don't know. I voted
sticker on the forehead. You know, as is par for the course, if you're following anybody on Instagram here in the United States, everybody's posting these on the stories. I am Brandon from Green Candle. I have officially voted in the great city of Tampa, Florida. And so, I'm live boots on the ground as well. So wow. Any questions down here? I mean,
and you know what? We've got it covered like diagonally. I'm in Washington State. You're in Florida. Like there's not much we could miss.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I'm not sure there's any chance of Washington State going red though. That would be quite a story.
It's a lock.
Yeah. First time ever, I guess. Okay, so Julian, you mentioned today and you mentioned just now that you got your eye on a couple races. I am keen on hearing the Arizona race information because I know there's a guy running there. I think his name is Blake Masters, right? He's a teal disciple and Bitcoiner. Tell me about this guy. Why should I care?
So sort of Bitcoiner. I would say he's conservative, but with like quite a few libertarian leanings. And I mean, his rise has been pretty incredible. He was, he started out not being the obvious choice in the Republican primaries until he ended up getting an endorsement from Trump. And then he basically, you know, he took the top spot, and then he's going up against the incumbent, I believe, for that seat, which is Mark Kelly. And he was trailing him for a long time. But if you go to like, I don't know if this will show polling results. And again, you know, polls are polls, but like his rise has been just massive in Arizona. And he's running, you know, for every $10 that Mark Kelly has, he has about like two or three, even with Thiel's backing, he's just running like a much leaner campaign. And he's just been crushing it on social media, canvassing. I'm not like a Republican fanboy or anything, but that's one of the most interesting races to me just because he does not have any political experience or background, I think, compared to a lot of other people running. I know in Pennsylvania, Mehmet Oz is running as well, but he's a bit more of like a public facing figure. Blake Masters came from like, you know, the investing world and, you know, first time in politics, and he looks pretty close to taking it in Arizona. So that's my most anticipated race to see what happens there. And yeah, I mean, like the reason I'm really excited about these elections today is, you know, everyone knows what's been going on today with FTX and all that. And I think the obvious thing is, I think the timeline in which we're probably going to get some crypto legislation going through is sped up, but we're going to be doing so with a pretty gridlocked, Congress, Senate, White House. But there's going to be, I think, a lot of Republicans that are getting in some of these midterms that are going to have a pretty big impact on how the legislation is crafted. And I think, surprisingly, I think crypto legislation is one of those issues that in a gridlocked, Congress, government or whatever, I think that's one of the pieces of legislation that can actually make it through instead of all the blockading that we know is going to go on. And then you know, obviously the Republicans are going to try and impeach Biden probably over something. But I do think crypto legislation got bumped, I think, in part of all the stuff going on with FTX. And I think because of this Republican sweep that we're going to get.
You think it's going to be a red wave, eh? So, Dean, I'll kick it to you here. You're the investment guy in the group. You know, do you have colleagues, friends, peers of yours who have political aspirations? You don't have to name them, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on investment guys moving from that sphere into politics. I personally don't see a lot of overlap, but obviously the people who make the jump do. What do you think?
So, you know, I was born in Saskatchewan, raised in Alberta. So, you know, the joke was in Alberta back in the days, you could run a broomstick for public office as long as it was conservative and it would get in. So that was kind of the way I was raised. And I think that, you know, the overwhelming thing that I always heard from people is like, well, you know, this politician, he's never even run a business before. How, you know, why are we throwing him the keys to our, you know, the country's economy? And what I've come to realize is that, you know, and I think Trump, he presented this quite well, is that, you know, running a business and balancing a budget and all those types of things is very different than running a country, because, you know, corporations inherently don't have to work. Like, if you have, you know, disabled people and you have elderly people and you have dead weight in your company, whatever that might be, you fire those people. You can be a little bit more ruthless. Running for public office and running a country has challenges that are very different than running a company. And I think the conservative that I grew up as really sort of discounted all of that. And I'll call it, you know, I'm speaking from a company perspective. You can jettison the dead weight and you're applauded for it. You're celebrated for it. You can't turn around and do that with healthcare as people get older and all that sort of stuff. So I think that, you know, having people that are successful in business, that's certainly helpful, but you know, when they've had kind of a myopic focus, I'd be a little suspicious of those guys, because I think that's a tough transition. I think it's tougher than people give it credit for.
Brandon, what's the mood on the ground there as far as the two, at least what I think are the two biggest ballot issues, probably in most of the country? One is inflation and the economy, will say. The other, abortion. You know, I don't want to go too deep here. I know that's, you know, a tough question to hit you with right off the hop, but yeah. You know, how many, I mean, you're in a red area, maybe.
No, well, so here's how I'll preface it. Is like, majority of major cities in the United States are somewhat blue leaning. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really interesting time in Florida, because it's, you know, it used to be kind of a swing state, and it's kind of going full red right now. Hillsborough County, where I'm at, is in Tampa. It's historically very blue. They actually have, like, they're one of, I think, two or three cities in the United States that have an openly gay and female mayor. So just kind of like some preface there. And it's swung red, I think, for one of the first times ever. And, you know, I'm seeing a tweet here. It's a Democratic erosion from a Miami-Dade county is also very alarming. It's been kind of moving that way. And it's a county that Hillary Clinton grabbed 2/3 of the votes against Donald Trump here. And they voted for a Democratic, you know, governor at that time, you know, 60% of the vote. And now it's turning red. So they're calling this reversal in Florida seismic. And it's not my words. It's you know, so, some of the news outlets. So it seems like Florida's, you know, extremely fed up with the way everything's going, and extremely happy with the way that, you know, Governor DeSantis kind of handled everything in Florida. And I think, like, a lot of other places are kind of looking at the way Florida handled things, and kind of looking at that as a benefit. You know, there's of course, you know, the abortion issue, the Roe v. Wade. I've seen some signs that, you know, say all this and that, you know, vote for, you know, keeping abortion legal and all this stuff. Like, when I walk around certain neighborhoods with my dog and whatnot, but you know, for the most part, I think like Republicans have generally just been like kind of, okay, we'll vote, like not really, you know, rush to the ballot box kind of thing. But I think this time's very different. You know, I personally have never really voted in a midterm election. I'm noticing a lot more friends that are doing it as well this time. And so, you know, I'm seeing that and, you know, kind of to what, you know, somebody was talking about earlier, I'm really interested in the Arizona race. It seems like some hairy things have kind of been going on there. And I actually just saw a tweet that says they're filing for like an emergency motion to extend. Here we go. Extend voting hours in Arizona's Maricopa County, citing concerns about the voting machines. So for those who didn't see, it seemed like that was kind of going viral around, you know, where these, you know, voting machines essentially were, you know, suddenly not working for some reason. So I don't know. I mean, it seems like they've been, the general feeling that I've been getting is everybody's kind of anticipated a red wave, and it seems like it's kind of coming that way so far, at least.
I got a question to do with the actual election itself. Now, we have a lot of Canadian listeners and viewers for our channel, and even myself, I'm not fully understanding exactly what's at play here. How do they select which seats are going to be elected this time around and during the midterms? Is this done predetermined? Like, do you know how this at the end of last election, or when is this decided? How does it work? How many seats are at play, and what's being decided today?
I don't know if anybody wants to take that, but
I'm hoping one of you Americans.
This is my vague understanding. Every state has two Senate seats, and I think for the most part they kind of go back and forth every 4 years. There's an election every 4 years, so it's one's offset by two. So the other half of the Senate seats, I believe, are up for election in 2020.
You know what's interesting about that, though, is that that's my understanding as well. But I'm wondering, because Georgia ended in a runoff for both of those seats last time, and only Warnock's up this time. So I don't. I'm with you. That's your understanding is correct. I'm just
that's a
not
really
sure
good point. That's a really good point. Yeah.
So.
Are you guys calling Herschel?
Yeah, why is Warnock up? That doesn't really make sense.
None of us know how the election works.
I'm just a simple Canuck. I know how it works here in Canada. I was hoping that the
we should have been debriefed before this to say, look, I'm going to ask a really hard question. Could somebody figure that out?
You went to the polling station to make to drop a vote there. I'm sure that you have an idea what it is you're voting for, right?
But you know, as long as we're talking about Georgia, we got to talk about the most interesting candidate in the whole thing. And that's got to be Herschel Walker. Like, my God, as a kid, I loved Herschel Walker. and I still do I've got to say, and he might win. There's a very good chance he might win.
He's
that
not doing that well right now. I'm looking at the numbers.
He's underperforming Warnock right now.
It's 40% of the votes.
It would not surprise me at the end of the night if we're not talking about Senator Herschel Walker, but I'm amazed that in the whole grand scheme of things, you're like, hey, Republican Party, let's run a guy. Let's get this seat back. It's so, you know, it's so polarized. It's so close. And you come up and like, I would like to see what some of the other resumes would have been, because I remember reading about Herschel Walker and his multiple personality disorder and all that stuff like years ago, like not like years and years and years ago. So I was really sort of, and also his kind of unfortunate situations with his various wives and stuff like that. Like, I'm just amazed that we're at a place where we can run candidates like this and they can be successful. Like, it's not, you know, nothing against anybody, but that's a pretty remarkable, if he does win that seat, that's a pretty remarkable story.
So Jordan, friend of the show, is
can we throw Fetterman in there? That's pretty remarkable.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So here's your explanation, right? Senate term is 6 years, so the seat changes every cycle. So one seat changes every cycle. Okay, so there you go. That's
okay.
You know,
so yeah, you're gonna okay, yeah.
What seats come up? The Fetterman Mehmet Oz race is it's like a gong show over there, right? I don't know if you guys saw this, but I understand that Oprah Winfrey, who basically, you know, formed Dr. Oz the same way the Lord above formed Adam and Eve so many moons ago, came out in favor of Fetterman the other day. Did that actually happen? Am I imagining that, or did she actually come out in favor of the other candidate?
I think I heard that as well.
Yeah. Like, that's brutal, man. And Fetterman, this is the interesting thing about, you know, American politics, especially the polarization of that culture over there, is that you can be a Democrat and, or you, excuse me, you can't be a Democrat. It seems to me anyway, if you watch mainstream media and you know, for, you know, and let that influence your opinion, you can't be a Democrat and have concerns that Fetterman is not at the moment fit to be part of a sitting government because of his health issues. No one's saying that, you know, it's not unfortunate that he had a stroke, but, you know, everyone has seen those interviews and debates. You know, the debate with Oz was one of probably the worst bits of campaign decision-making I think anyone has ever seen or ever made. And I don't know, like what do we make of that? This polarization that you can't even have any nuance in your, you know, you may want a Democrat, but you know, you can't have this fella, can you? Not right
can
now.
Can I chime in on that one? Can I go with that, Joey?
Absolutely.
Because I think the Fetterman and the Herschel Walker thing is a very interesting parallel. So basically it comes down to, and I completely understand the Republicans, that it power is too finite. You know, I'd have to ask myself, regardless of what has happened to Fetterman, regardless of the situation that Walker finds himself in, if I'm a Republican or a Democrat, I've got to back that guy no matter what, because if we don't, we change horses, we don't vote for one guy or the other, we lose, there's just something bigger at play. So it's not about who's going to represent me and who's going to represent me as a citizen of Georgia or a citizen of Pennsylvania. It's about controlling that nationwide. And so you don't really have a choice if you're a Democrat voting for Fetterman, even though you think he's impaired. I don't know that that makes a difference. Or if you vote for Walker with his issues, I think you just need somebody that's capable of pushing a button and saying yay or nay when it comes time to vote in the Senate.
That's a good point. We just brought in
party lines through and through, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
We just brought in SB of Woke Canada fame. SB, thanks for coming. Glad you could make it. I don't know what took you so long, but what are your thoughts on what we're seeing so far, sir? You're also boots on the ground in the US of A.
You know, so far, so good. We are, first of all, how's the mic? Is it good?
Sounds good.
Crispy. Okay.
Better than normal, SB. What happened?
You know, I got an upgrade just for this podcast specifically. No, the results, I was listening to some of what Brandon was saying. These Florida results are incredible. I was just watching MSNBC. The districts that went Biden plus 6, plus 10, plus 15, Republicans are way up now. Some of that's the early voting and same-day voting, and they're going to have the ballot drops later. But all indications right now looking pretty good for the red wave, but we'll have to see. Because Florida, that's a state where we can kind of trust their elections. Can we actually trust some of these other Democrat-controlled states? I'm not so sure of it. But so far, so good. I'm confident.
Is this a real concern? Are we really – like, are you guys – Brandon's nodding his head already. I don't know how you feel, Dean, Julian, Len. Like, I am really not sure whether or not I'm taking crazy pills – thinking that I should be just a little worried about election integrity in some of these places.
Well, I'm not sure how it is in Canada, but I think the incredible thing about the United States is that like the process is almost different state to state. And it's extremely different in each counties too. But, you know, there's obviously the big conspiracy and all that kind of stuff going around with the mail-in ballots. Last election. Well, Florida's been doing mail-in ballots for quite some time, so they kind of have that system down. And, you know, you can have a mail-in ballot or something along those lines and bring it in and have them scan it as well, you know, at your given county. But, you know, I just think, like, the process from what I went through here in Florida was just so extremely smooth and I never really – had any lines or anything like that. I mean, I was in and out of there in like 15 minutes or something like that. You know, I have friends that went and did the same thing and they had their similar experiences. But, you know, from what I hear in other states, you know, it's not as regulated. I mean, I had my ID checked a couple times before I actually received the same ballot. You know, it was really, I checking the T's or crossing the T's, dotting the I's kind of thing. I had to confirm that, you know, all these things matched and what have you. And I could see, you know, it definitely not being that regulated in certain states. I mean, you know, over the county of that I'm in, I mean, we had, you know, probably close to 100 like different places where people could go and vote in this county alone. And so I'm not sure if like, you know, all these counties are regulated as this one that I'm specifically in is, but I mean, from what I can tell, like it just, the process was so smooth and it seemed like it was, you know, I guess run very efficiently. Whereas, you know, from what I hear in other states, there, you know, there's no electronic things or the electronic things go down. It's going to take a couple weeks in order to get all these results in. But, you know, I mean, Florida should probably have all the results in by the end of the night.
It's interesting to me that it's only the swing states that seem to have any issues with, like, there's only long lines in swing states. Because up here in Washington, voting is simple and smooth and, like, there's no issue. Now, you're in Florida. That is more of a swing state. That's more kind of a contentious little spot. But yeah, I would agree with Brandon. Like voting, if you watch the news, it's like these long lines and they're passing these laws and like people are starving to death while they're waiting to vote and all that sort of stuff. You wouldn't know it by my experience. That I cannot vouch for any of that news because that's just not the reality up here in Washington.
SB, what do you say? Could be doing anything. He's on mute. He doesn't know.
I'm here. I'm watching the Lib channels trying to make sense of what's going on. I got Chris Wallace, formerly of CNN Plus fame, on my TV here. I just got in our Blake Masters. We all love Blake. He was on Marty's podcast a while back. He was on Marty's podcast when he was like a no name, running for, you know, he was in the primary for the Arizona Senate. But I just saw a tweet from someone, I think, who works with his campaign. She's saying that in that Maricopa County, which is supposed to be like, oh, you know, where people were thinking that there were shenanigans, apparently 53% of the votes are GOP, 16% Democrat, 29% Independent. So that's probably a pretty damn good sign.
What? Is that like
16% Democrat?
Yeah, Scope. Yeah, she's advising. I put it on the Woke Antidote account. She's advising.
Sounds
yeah,
like
Maricopa County. If you, it's hard to follow him because I don't know where he is these days. He's been on Twitter, but Patrick Byrne, former CEO of Overstock, has launched like a massive lawsuit against Maricopa County for some of the stuff that went on during the 2020 election. I don't know if he's on anything, but like, man, he is devoutly fighting that.
I am curious about what you guys think about this this idea that abortion and inflation are enough to bring out the marginal voter, quote unquote, the marginal voter for each party. I was listening to a number of different pundits today. I like Rich Barris a lot, the People's Pundit on YouTube. I don't know if you guys watch him at all, but you know, him and his wife and a few of the guests he's had on have been talking about the marginal voter. How are both parties trying to target this person? The sort of middle millennial, elder millennial type who doesn't really care to vote in a midterm. Brandon, you're not quite an elder millennial. You're probably about, you know, you might be the youngest millennial maybe or close to it, but all the same, the age bracket is still, you know, it still stands. You said you've never voted in a midterm before. Something drew you out to the ballot this time, out to the ballot box this time. And you mentioned a lot of your friends are doing the same thing. So do you think that these two issues have been enough to bring those votes out? And which way do you think most of those votes are going to go? I think we should all, you know, let people know what we think. In my view, inflation for people who don't own a home and are having trouble buying a home would be enough to get me out to the ballot box. But I want to hear what you guys think too.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think I think inflation has definitely gotten people out there. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think the Roe v. Wade overturning is kind of overblown. Like I've heard maybe one or two people that have like kind of made that a huge issue. Maybe that's just because of the people I kind of surround myself with. But I mean, like, I think, you know, it's kind of an emotionally charged thing that gets people fired up for, you know, maybe a week or so, and then they kind of forget about it because it doesn't really, you know, affect them too much. But the inflation aspect is what I think a lot of people are upset about. You know, they're going to the gas tank, they're trying to, you know, fill up stuff. And I think, you know, especially down here in Florida, you're seeing rents skyrocket. And that's because, you know, people have been kind of cooped up for a couple years, and then they're moving down to this state that, you know, used to be, you know, Tampa used to be one of the more affordable cities in Florida that's big and kind of growing and up and coming. And now it's slowly becoming, you know, almost unaffordable kind of areas, kind of similar to like cities like Austin and other places like that. And so, you know, I think the inflation is definitely the biggest thing. People are looking at, you know, how much it takes to fill up a gas tank, how much is taken to go to the grocery store. You know, people are looking at their 401ks. I think like a lot of people are just kind of looking at that stuff more so than maybe the Roe v. Wade. But I mean, I definitely think that that's probably an issue. But, you know, if it was something that in my personal opinion, I think if it was somebody that was going to get emotionally charged to go out and vote for Roe v. Wade, they would do it. They would vote, you know, Democratic for any other reason either. Right. They would probably vote because they think, you know, Republicans are racist or something else like along those lines, where that's where they would kind of come out and vote. And they're like anticipating this, you know, the red wave that everybody's talking about. And so they think they don't want these big, bad, you know, bigoted Republicans in office. And so I think that would be enough to get them in there. And I don't think like the Roe v. Wade was necessarily a big driving factor, but I'm also in Florida. So, I mean, yeah. You know, that's kind of the way I see it. I'd like to hear the guy in Washington to see.
Yeah. You know, so I'll tackle that from this perspective, and it's from the inflation front. I think the Democrats have done a terrible job addressing the inflation thing, simply because from what I do and from the people that I employ and the work that we do, the research that we do, in our circles, we inherently understand that there is no way that Joe Biden could have come into office with his majority in Congress and created in 2 years inflation. It takes 40 years. You know, it's the worst inflation. So the idea that, and you'll know when the Republicans, who do a very good job of messaging, say, well, it's the, you know, it takes so much to fill up your gas tank and it's inflation and all that sort of stuff. Democrats haven't addressed that. The reality is inflation started in the, you know, when we had it in the late 70s, because we defaulted on our gold obligation. That's what started it. And it was 5 years later, and Jimmy Carter ended up like paying the price for it, right? He ended up getting booed out because he was a Democrat, but it started with Nixon. And over the past 40 years, since we've had inflation the first time, we've set the pieces in, like, start in 2008. We bailed out our banks and printed $250 billion worth of bailout money, and we bailed out our automakers. And we kept on sort of rolling through all of that. And it took a supply chain kink and the subsequent opening of the economy that, you know, Joe Biden ends up, he draws the short straw. He's the guy that's gonna lose the House and Senate, or his majority in Congress, because of it. But it speaks to, this whole thing speaks to our lack of long-term thinking, and it permeates throughout our society. We have our CEOs report on our publicly traded companies every 90 days, quarterly. So they're making decisions every quarter because they want to see those numbers higher next quarter than they were the quarter before. And so he's forced to think short-term. We have our politicians come in and we vote for them every 4 years, and we have midterm elections. So they've got to like run around and kind of do short-term fixes for long-term problems. And that's kind of gotten us here, where we've got guys, you know, here that are like, believe super strongly that if the Republicans get in, we're going to be okay. Or transversely, if the Democrats can just hold on, we're going to be able to protect our women from, you know, like all the tyranny from all that. And we're hearing all that, depending on where you get the news from, you're hearing all this scary shit on both sides. That's only partially true on both sides. It's most of it, whether you're on the right or the left, what you're hearing is partially made up to scare you. But I can tell you, the Democrats have done a shitty job addressing the inflation issue, because that's a force of nature. And guess what? It peaked in the summer, and it's going to be gone by early 23. And whoever wins control of Congress is going to be able to take credit for that. And it's just a force of nature. It's a breeze that's going through, and you're going to deal with it. There's going to be a lot of pain. Furthermore, in terms of, 401ks and whatnot, the Fed is the one raising interest rates, and they'll keep raising interest rates regardless who's in control of Congress.
I don't think average voters, like if you took like a gamut of both independents, Republicans, and Democrats, I don't think there is a strong consensus on where inflation comes from. I know that we understand it. You know, we look at the monetary supply and things like that. But I'm telling you, there are a ton of Democrats who believe that it comes from corporate greed.
Yeah.
That somehow, you know, oil companies are controlling PPI, and they're just charging more, and they're just taking over big profits. There was this report the other day that Loblaws, which is like, you know, one of the biggest, I guess, grocery store franchises in Canada, was making like $1 million of excess profit per day. And I like looked at that thing, and it was like the most shared thing on Daily Hive or something when I saw it. This is in Canada, but it's the same deal in the US. Yeah. So I think it's really like, I think people are feeling the pain of inflation, but I think most voters who are voting Republican are not voting because they think that Republicans can stop inflation any way. I think there is I don't think there is a firm belief that either party is really creating, and I think people just don't really know where it comes from. To me, the line in the sand, and I think the reason that a lot of voters are coming out, and I'm just surprised it's not mentioned more in polls for like why people aren't positive about the future, it's all to do with these COVID restrictions. This is the single biggest event that has changed the way that Americans live, in the states they live, what they do with their lifestyles, the jobs they have, and it all happened in the last 2 years. The restrictions, the lockdowns, all that stuff, the amount of people who moved from like West Coast to East Coast, who moved to, Nashville and Austin, like there was a massive migration of people, and people are seeing their communities torn apart because of this, whether you had disagreements over your friends on whether or not to take the vaccine, whether your friends straight up just moved to different areas. People have seen the policies of the restrictive COVID lockdowns as a massive mistake, and that was perpetuated by and far by Democrats. I think this is a complete referendum on that. I think there are other big issues, the abortion, the inflation thing, but if there's something that really hits home, because a lot of people say, voting doesn't change anything. It doesn't matter what I'm voting for because, you know, all politicians are going to do the same thing. Not on this issue, right? We know for sure that Republicans, by and large, were not in favor of these restrictive lockdowns, the passes to get into places, the travel restrictions. They've been pushing to get rid of those as well. It's a referendum on those policies. And that's just what I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well said indeed.
Yeah. Brandon, you got to sign off because you got a Twitter Spaces that you run Tuesday night. So tell people, first of all, thank you for making time. I know it's tight for you. Tell people where they can find you. And if you want to listen to Brandon Spaces and just watch the crying on TV on mute, you can do that at 8:30 when we're done. Brandon, where can they get the
yeah,
space?
For sure. So I'll be at Green Candle IT. So, you know, just to kind of go on to it and maybe like leave you guys with a little cliffhanger if you're going to pass to SB next, but I'd be curious to hear about how you guys think the markets reacted, because generally speaking, after a Democratic president wins, the market goes up, and then when a Republican president wins, the market goes down. And today we saw the market kind of shoot up in anticipation of this red wave. So I think it's pretty interesting that we're seeing it kind of flip then from the general norm, but at Green Candle IT, I mean, you know, I'll be interacting with you guys probably throughout the night, but come hop in the Twitter Spaces after you guys are done, and I appreciate you guys having on. All right. Well, I'm out.
Looking at the price of Bitcoin, it's holding steady at 18.3. So make that what you, so hopefully it moves up, but we'll see what happens. But I have a question, and I want to propose this to SB. And is there any possibility, is there any outcome tonight that's going to lead to Biden running again, or is he just basically politically speaking dead man walking?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking that potentially Newsom is the one that they would put in for 24, people seem to like him. He's got more stamina, obviously. He's good looking. I mean, the media is going to mold him to whatever they want to in terms of what policies he'll bring and whatnot. So I think also if 22 is such a wipeout, is such a tsunami, then the Dems in 24 can essentially run on, oh, we didn't actually do that. Newsom's coming in new and fresh. So it's not even Harris that is the VP. It's someone totally out of the picture. So, yeah, I could potentially see that. But, yeah, I mean, even they were – I was hearing initially that Biden wasn't going to say anything tomorrow. But I think as the night has gone on, now he's actually going to have a statement because, I mean, look, if we back up a little bit, historically, even if you're doing a great job, if your party gets the presidency – in the midterms after 2 years, you just get beat. That's like inevitable in American politics. It happens. Even if you're amazing, people just do that. But now you add on all the stuff we've been talking about tonight, which is just, I mean, we could have the worst economic situation in decades. We've talked about how inflation's out of control. The 60-40 portfolio is down. Retirement accounts are out of control in a negative way. I mean, it's possible that we actually have a serious tsunami tonight. DeSantis is up by 15. And I was telling you guys this, but for the general audience, so like for my job, I look at media companies, and some subset of media companies I look at are ones that own these local broadcast stations. And so when political people raise money, what they're doing is they're basically flooding the zone with TV ads. And what I've been hearing lately is station owners in Florida, North Carolina, and even Arizona, they have been expecting like crazy amounts of money, and they were banking on that for their political advertising. That actually didn't happen. The money was pulled out of typical swing states, Florida, North Carolina, and Arizona, went to New York for the governor's race, went to Seattle, went to Oregon, and went to LA for some California races. And you saw it because stocks like Gray Television's one of the stocks, it was down 35% after their earnings because people thought they'd have a lot more political revenue than expected, and they had stations in Florida and Arizona. So what I heard from those companies is completely accurate in terms of what's happening in Florida because they're up 15 up there. But if that's accurate, then it's also accurate in North Carolina, Arizona, New York, Oregon. We really could be looking at something incredible here.
But so is the suggestion then that those states that are typically not, you know, places where these parties would park money because they're, you know, quote unquote gimmies, they're moving the money there? Do I have that right?
They're moving it out. So basically states, you would typically have a bunch of Democrat and Republican money. That's moving out of typical swing states into typically Democrat areas. And so they didn't specify this, but presumably what you'd have is both Democrats playing defense and giving up on other areas.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Offense on new areas and knowing they have the other areas in the bag.
Wow. That's not a good way to spend FTX money. They should find a better way to do so.
$1 billion in 2024. That's what he said he was going
to
do.
Dude, he's not even a billionaire anymore, according to Bloomberg. Correct.
You don't have to tell SB that he's got a Bloomberg terminal. He reminds us.
Have you guys seen Silicon Valley? That scene where like the guy loses the money. He's like, my doors don't go like this. They go like this.
It is, man. It's you know, as far as like the market reaction to tonight. Okay, we talked about this on our show, Julian. I've heard you talk about it as well. SB, Dean, you guys are close to the, you know, you guys are close to the ground on this stuff. The financial ecosystem and environment after an election, typically, as Julian was doing his interpretive dance earlier, if you didn't see it, you know, you typically see markets go up after midterm elections with, I don't know, I guess hopefulness or hopefully a policy pivot or whatever. But, you know, to your point earlier, you know, a bunch of you guys made this point, so I don't want to put one name on it. We're in a different environment now than we've been in different midterms in the past, presidential elections in the past. This is much different. Are we expecting a similar result as far as the market direction? Interest rates are still high. Jerome Powell is still very firm on what he plans to do with the American policy. Europe's still in an energy crunch, still a hot war between, you know, with the nuclear power involved over in Europe. Is this going to be different? Are we expecting the same outcome? Julian, why don't you go first?
Well, I mean, I think there's like a lot of factors. You know, I did the up dance over a bunch of factors. I think number one is, you know, traditionally year end, there has to be some sort of buying. You have to show that you've done something if you're a fund manager for the year, right? So you're going to see end of quarter buying on something. And who knows, you know, maybe that's just, I read the other day, like McDonald's is making an all time high. I'm paying attention to the wrong markets because like the Dow Jones is ripping, QQQ and crypto is like eating shit. But like everything else, it seems like those blue chip stocks are doing really well. So, you know, maybe that's where all the money's allocating. But between midterms, between end of quarters, usually being, you know, seasonally bullish, between this just being like, you know, the time of year that people kind of reflect on, you know, where they are financially. Like, I don't know if there's like a stat around that, but I know myself personally, like I always use the end of the year to kind of look at where I'm at, you know, with money and stuff. It's just, there's so much out there that, you know, compared to the same time last year that I can't help but think somebody's going to put some money to work. Like if you have cash, and you haven't put it into anything, you've waited 9 months on cash, and sure, you can now, you know, you can get 5% yield on like a 2 or 10 year bond or whatever, but like, it's not what the appetite is for most money. So I don't know. I just lean bullish. And then, you know, the gridlock, it has two effects. Number one, like we know spending, you know, gets capped to some degree, but we also know where priority goes. And, you know, things like student loan relief look very unlikely to pass in this situation. I don't know if they can pass it without congressional approval. But that stuff, I think it's good for markets. And it also means that things like tax increases are not going to get passed anytime soon, right? 2 years of knowing that the corporate tax rate is probably not going to change, I think that's probably a good thing for markets.
Boys, what do we think?
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I think gridlock is when the markets perform the best, because as to exactly what you said, yeah, my prediction is the better, the more intense the red wave, I even think the market starts looking to 2024 and thinking that if we have a pro-business and even just pro-common sense, you have Trump with oil, for example. I mean, the oil itself is causing so many problems with inflation and helping to force the Fed to raise rates. If you had a guy like Trump in there, he already told us and showed us what he would do if the oil price was getting out of hand. I mean, he would use the strategic might of the U.S. to force it down. And he did that multiple times. So I think the market, if we get the tsunami, they start thinking, all right, not only do we have a gridlock in 2022 to 24, but it's probably likely that this schlub Biden is going to get demolished in 24. So either it's a new face, which is risky, or it's going to be red. And then you have that, you know, that very pro-business climate that you really only previously had from 2016 to maybe 2018. So yeah, my prediction is red wave and market rips, and that includes Biddy too.
And look, we have to think about this too. That, you know, if we were around in 2018, we had a, you know, three month just destruction of QQQ and SPY. Like nobody remembers it, but like Apple stock went down 50% in like 3 months back in 2018, right before the Powell pivot. Now, there's a lot of reasons that maybe Powell pivoted, but I think one of them is Trump did put pressure on him to some degree. Do you guys believe that at all? Because if you do, then you have to think that if Republicans win, they can have a say in pushing the Fed in one direction or another.
Yeah.
Or do you think that they not have any sway at all? Because I really think like Powell's pivot in 2018 was proof that, you know, with enough willpower, Trump or Republicans can push him in one way or another.
100%. The central banks are not arm's length as they'd have you believe. Same thing here in Canada, unfortunately. Over here, Julian, we just had the market predict 75, 75, 75, and they gave us 50. You immediately lose credibility doing that. That's political pressure in my view.
Yeah.
Dean, what do you think?
It's a different animal here in Canada, though.
It is. But still, this idea that there's two separate entities here, a central bank and a sitting government, is incorrect.
Yeah.
It is on paper only. In real life, this is not the case.
Well, when you're giving up all
the same table,
all the profits, you give it to the federal government in the United States. they're tied to each other. So when the Federal Reserve makes a profit, that profit gets sent to the United States Treasury Department. So, sorry, Dean. So go ahead.
Yeah, I think I kind of like to back it out a little bit. You know, I think that some of the stuff that, you know, just sort of bigger picture, red wave, no red wave. I think one of the things that I'm interested in is this sort of, frankly, the war in Ukraine and sort of how that is really, to me, that is feeling like the first real threat that we're seeing to the US dollar as the world reserve currency. And I think that that's Putin's long game. And so, you know, we may see, regardless of who wins, I agree with the guys. I think it's probably good short term for the markets. But I do think we're at the end of a long term debt cycle. I've talked to you guys before that. And it is, we're going to be through a period of, you know, political polarization, lots of volatility, lots of heartache and pain, and kind of the beginning of the end of the way we've had it. So I think that, you know, 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, and we're not going to be, the West is slowly eroding, their power is slowly eroding away, because the you know, Putin may win or lose this war, I don't know, but the proxy on the petrodollar and the idea of what would you rather have this winter, you know, food and power, or just a stack full of paper, you know, US dollars, I think most people are gonna go for the food and the warmth. And I think that's beginning to kind of erode the whole thing. So again, long-term thinking, I think, you know what, I think that there probably is going to be a red wave. I think that the guys are probably absolutely right on the markets. But longer term, I think that it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough few years, because we're getting, you know, this once in five generation change that comes around, and the hallmark of that is never a real good time.
So we got about 15 minutes left. Why don't we talk about this a little bit? We spent 45 minutes talking about the sort of nuances as best we could anyway, as outside observers, some of these races, the important things about the election, you know, what it means for markets and Bitcoin, things we care about, short, medium term. Long term, Dean, am I wrong here? Are you saying, you know, does any of this really matter as far as the forces that are driving civilization forward? Are we too far removed from? Are we too far gone for the?
Yeah,
guy in the White House to make a difference?
I mean, you know what? Yeah, like pro business government, anti business. I don't believe that as far as America goes, either one of those parties relative to the rest of the world is anti-business. I think in America, we can pick those two out. We can say Biden's anti-business and Trump is pro-business, or the Republicans, Democrats, all that sort of stuff. But I mean, I drive back and forth across that border all the time. Gas in America still is not as expensive now as it is in Canada, just in every day, right? Like, so relatively speaking, we don't even really have inflation relative to other parts of the world, right? Like, because we have the printing press, we have the money, we print the money. The rest of the world is really hurting, and they've got real problems. We don't really, in America, things are relatively good, even though we've got this hyperbolic sort of echo chamber on both sides, just churning out all this scary shit all the time. But the rest of the world's kind of fed up, I think, a little bit with the tyranny that's been sort of put upon it by the economic power that the U.S. has been able to flex over the rest of the world. And it's kind of big, and because we can't come together and we can't figure our shit out domestically, it's going to cost us big time. And we're going to shit the bed here over the next little while. So to speak, just to coin a phrase.
A lot of scary shit being bandied about. And then Dean says, you know, we got a long, hard road ahead. Julian, what say you, buddy?
Yeah, I think I echo those points dramatically. I think what I really am trying to figure out, and, you know, it's hard to monitor 170 countries, is like, I do think that there is going to be this deglobalization, and there is going to be forging of new allies. I think like, you know, I think BRICS is maybe an obvious one, but you know, there's still hundreds of other dozens of other countries out there, and they're going to have to find strategic allies between each other. And they're going to have to figure out what's the priority in creating, you know, these partnerships. Do we need to have a partner that supplies us with energy and then we provide them with workers or immigrants or innovation or something? And I'm really, really interested to see how that pans out in places like South America, where they have economies where they don't really need to import much to, you know, be fully sustainable. Like they have within that continent, oil, abundant energy. They don't maybe have like the tech innovators, but they can start, you know, poaching some Americans or Europeans on that front too, or, you know, even people from Asia. I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, I guess the deglobalization and the impact the US has in kind of pulling talent from everywhere, and seeing some of these countries like El Salvador become, you know, options for people who want to live in places with lower taxes, who want more personal freedoms, who want to be able to start families and are willing to go the extra mile of learning an extra language or, you know, having a different type of citizenship to achieve their dreams. So, yeah, I mean, I would say to, you know, people watching and yourself, I think all of us, at least at one point in the last 2 years, have probably gone on the internet for a bit and looked at some other country and looked at how things are going there. Or we've looked at El Salvador and we've thought like, so how hard is it to get a, like, you know, a citizenship there, or like, you know, Barbados or something like that. Like everyone's brains are churning right now with those thoughts. Like, what if I actually, you know, stripped away my Canadian citizenship or American citizenship, or just lived somewhere else 6 months out of the year? Number of people leaving, I think, is going to just keep going up. Because you want to go where you feel positive about the future. And there's so many places where that's happening that aren't the first world countries right now. So.
SP, what do you got?
Yeah, I could not agree more with that. And I think I'm less on the finding a different country. I'm more so, I'm trying to set myself up for living in the U.S., but making sure I'm in a safe location. It's not going to be near cities. It's going to be self-sustaining. It's going to be preparing for what you guys have been saying. We've been living a good life here and we haven't known it. We could have a rough decade ahead of us. We had easy money. We had declining interest rates. We had anyone was a genius when the money printer was turned on. And we had this extraordinary wealth created. Really, a lot of it was under false pretenses. So now we're sitting here in 2022, and yeah, I'm hopeful for the very short term of 22, 24, maybe even a term or two in 24 if Republicans can win. But over the next couple decades, am I that hopeful for the country? Not really. And I hate saying that, but the way that our leaders are set up, even if we have someone incredible come in with the best possible scenario of a House and Senate, I mean, you still got the CIA, the FBI, the Federal Reserve. I mean, you've got the military industrial complex. You've got so many people that are in these systems that are really bringing down the country and the people in the country and making it into a society of the haves and the have-nots, where it's really just, it's the 1% and it's the rest of us. There's no middle class anymore. It's hollowed out. They want everyone to be on the take. And the problem is going to be when the government gets too big and we have too many liabilities and the US dollar collapses because we have terrible energy policy, everyone on the take, all of a sudden, there's no take anymore. And so what happens is there's a societal collapse. Now, I don't think that's going to happen immediately, but you can look to a country like Brazil for a situation that could happen to us. Brazil could be the picture of our future. That's not great. Look at what's happening there now. No one trusted those elections, and there's protests all over the country. Now, we're not even hearing about it because there's a media blackout about it, but the same thing could happen here in the U.S. And let's not even start about what could happen with Ukraine if we have bad leaders in. I mean, we still have the Biden administration for the next 2 years at least. Who the heck knows what's going to happen with that foreign policy? So, yeah, I think take the victory tonight, but don't let that color your view that you can kind of drift through life like we have been for the last decade. We cannot. Your mind needs to be right. Your body and your soul need to be right. You need to be fiat mining aggressively if you can. You need to be stacking hard, and you need to be physically and mentally preparing yourself for what could be a rough decade. So, you know, not to get too intense on a night like this, but this is important stuff because this is the world that has been created for us and what we have to work with going forward.
Unbelievable there. Wow. Did you black out? That's probably the most I've heard you go on a tangent, even on your own show, let alone my show. Okay. Before we go, let's talk about, since this is a Bitcoin show, briefly, we got about 5 minutes here. We got to talk about what happened today with this company, this man, this token. What are your thoughts on this disaster? Maybe a minute each, and then we'll get everyone out of here. We'll sign off and go watch the rest of this this election. Dean, you start, man. What do you make of all this? You've been a big Bitcoin only guy on our show and talking about the importance of Bitcoin and why it's the sort of king of the crypto space. You know, you look at this. You know, you're kind of close. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm sure you have some colleagues who are invested in other cryptocurrencies and think about these kinds of things with some frequency. What are you hearing? What are you thinking?
Well, you know, I think it's, I mean, I said earlier about, you know, what's going on in the Ukraine and the sort of the proxy on the US dollar. And we're seeing sort of the ninth inning of the US dollar as the world reserve currency. I don't know what replaces it. I think everybody's kind of got their own idea, but and I don't think Bitcoin is the next world reserve currency, but I think that it plays a significant role. I think, you know, as you guys know, I co-founded Luxfolio Holdings, which, you know, is obviously a Bitcoin miner and has fallen on hard times. That's been an expensive and painful experience. However, my faith in this network has never been stronger. And, it, you know, I think that it's, you know, I'm not as right-leaning as a lot of Bitcoiners are. I'm very much sort of centrist, or maybe, I don't know. Yeah, I call it centrist. But, you know, so maybe I'm in the minority there, but I am a huge believer in this network. Mainly the reason I am, and I continue to be, is it's one of the few the only technology that I think that is a true solution to just about all of the problems that we're talking about right now. The political polarization, the wars, the need for kinetic energy to solve our problems, for us to kill each other and whatnot. It is a historic technology that will survive this, despite today. It doesn't look like today, but it's I don't mean that to be so profound, but it will survive this and it'll go on to great things. So it's this is just baptism by fire for Bitcoin.
Love it. Love it. I'm with you there, man. Julian, what do you got?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think the thing that's drawn me to Bitcoin more than, you know, I used to just look at it like something I could make money on. And then what would I do with that money? I don't know. You know, do selfish things. It's become a movement for me. I was touched by like this idea that we could fight, you know, as like the 99% against the 1% back during the Occupy Wall Street days, but that fizzled out so quickly. And this is something different. We're like, this has been going on now for like 13, 14 years, and it's getting better and better. The intellectual and human capital in this space keeps growing. The meetups, the people that I've met locally in my home city, and the conversations I've had, and the depth of knowledge that these people have, and the different walks of life that they're from is astounding. And I just don't think something like that just peaks because the price peaks. It's not. There's such a big thing going on here with Bitcoin. And whatever happens with FTX doesn't really matter. I hope it creates some more BTC maxis. I will admit I lost probably about five figures today. If they give the money back to people, maybe I didn't, but I'm just writing it off in my head. I'm never going to get that money in my FTX account
again.
You had
something in FTX under exchange?
Yeah, I trade. So I had US dollars in there. And I shorted FTT, funny enough. So it's so weird. It's just like I made money shorting FTT, but it's worth zero because I can't pull it out. So fun stuff. You know what I really like about this space is like the free market forces, they just root out leverage so quickly. And yeah. Like I remember Dylan LeClaire and like a couple other people were posting about, oh yeah, it seems like Alameda kind of is solely controlling FTT. And then, you know, Caroline, who's the CEO of Alameda Research, is like, oh, we'll, you know, we'll buy all you have at $22. And it's just like, you put that out there, that level, $22, and you can see it on the chart. As soon as that broke, fucking zero. Yeah. Zero manifested. And it's amazing how quick that works. I remember when we were talking about Evergrande and the subprime mortgages, like these stuff take like weeks and months to unwind. And in the crypto space, it takes days and it hurts. It really hurts, but it's so good. We can flush this toxic stuff out so quickly. And you know, all things said, like this is brutal. This is like a $32 billion thing that's gone belly up. I would say the price of FTT has reflected that. You know, there's still a small chance that they might be solvent, but 80% drop in one day is the market saying this company's probably done. Bitcoin's still at like, you know, 18.3 or 18.2. So it's back to where it was essentially 3 weeks ago. And maybe it goes down to 16 or whatever, but like, I mean, how much worse is it going to get from here? You'll see a couple more firms go and solve them that were connected to FTX, but like, ultimately, Bitcoin doesn't care. The hodlers keep hodling, and we live another day, we learn another lesson. So
that's right. Well said. Yeah. SB, take us home. It's all you, man. What do you make of all this insanity here?
Yeah, two main points to hit on FTX. Every Bitcoin maxi knew this guy was a fraud, knew something stunk, knew that just the whole aura about him, it was off. And the way that this FTX rapidly rose, I mean, this was a Peloton-esque, Carvana-esque explosion of value. And you kind of look around and go, how did this become $30 billion of value almost overnight? Like, that has to be some shady VC type of stuff, but whatever. Marty Bent called out SBF. He went on CNBC, and he hated on proof of work. And that was the first major red flag. This is still when this guy was a little bit new in the scene. FTX probably wasn't worth $30 billion at that point. And that was a huge issue. Why are you supposedly running one of these biggest crypto exchanges and you're anti-proof of work? I mean, without that, there's no crypto. I mean, there's no Bitcoin, there's no crypto. So that was a terrible. And then, and of course, Marty Bent vindicated, like always. And then number two, then Bankman-Fried comes out and he's hating on the Lightning Network. I mean, when did this, you know, what transpired behind the scenes for this guy to come out and be throwing down and how Lightning Network doesn't work, can't handle transactions. And this is not only something that happened recently, this was several months ago too. And there were some previous old tweets people brought up in like early May, maybe, of, you know, Bitcoiners on Twitter, you know, saying, hey, you should check out Lightning. And he goes, yeah, I'll take a look into it. Like, no, we all know. We all knew he knew what Lightning was. He just didn't want to say it because he wanted to run an altcoin casino vehicle that he could then use the money for to play the shitcoin casino games himself. And he screwed himself, and that sucks for all the investors involved. I mean, it looks like Tom Brady and Giselle had equity stakes in the FTX, so they're wiped. All the VCs are wiped. They don't really care about them. But I saw some tweets from VC reporters like, this totally wipes out VC investing in crypto. You know, that's hyperbole. It's not going to. But yeah, maybe people should think twice about this kind of stuff. Dan Loeb, you know, this third point guy, he's had a track record for doing great in his career. You know, maybe a big part of that track record was riding that fiat gravy train, riding that money printer. Inevitably, law of averages, there's going to be one or two hedge funds that post good returns every year just because some have to. Maybe he's that guy. Maybe he's not that bright. And he gets into Ethereum, gets his face ripped off. His third point ventures invested in FTX, that's going to go to zero. Like these TradFi guys getting into crypto, it's like the Ontario pension, whatever, they just look like idiots. I mean, they did no due diligence. Where were the financials for this? Where was the research being done? I mean, in my job, I came across one of these funds that was looking to invest in crypto just in general and Web3. And this fund, like, not only didn't hold Bitcoin, they almost barely held meth. They were holding some esoteric, ridiculous shit coins. And so that fund's probably down 90%. Their investors are down even more. And look, it's for serious people here. Bitcoin's serious. I think Corey said it today. Bitcoin's the only crypto. I mean, it's Bitcoin or it's nothing else. And the maxis, everyone calls us mean. But you know what? Anybody calling maxis mean today? No. you know, because we saved you a bunch of fucking money if you listen to us. So, you know, I just don't even want to, I don't want to convince anybody who doesn't want to get it themselves. They need to seek it out for themselves. It's Bitcoin, not shitcoin. Don't mess around with FTX. Don't mess around with any of these other places. You got burnt already. The 2022s had their own versions of ICOs, and NFTs. And basically, look, we all know the next cycle, it's going to happen again. People have short memories, but we're going to be there when the fans flame, people get wrecked. The Bitcoin maxis are always going to be there for you, helping you out.
That's right. It's such a strong community in the Bitcoin maxi space. Before we close out, I'll note that the Ontario Teachers Pension went in on FTX not once, but twice, Series B and Series C.
At the top.
Yeah, at a $42 billion val, I'm pretty sure.
There's no indication exactly how much they invested because they were in with a whole bunch of other investors. So specifically how much they invested, it's undisclosed, and we probably will never get that information.
Well, my feeling on that is if it was very little, they would have announced it. And so my assumption is that it's a lot.
I think it was $400 million.
That's a lot.
That was the totality. It was $420 million for total. Well,
that was the size of the raise.
Yes. Oh, and okay. So they were one of, okay, I forget how many companies, 30 or something like that. So even if you divide it up evenly, I don't think it's like that. So they're going to take a hefty pay cut. Yeah. But in reality, how much is it? We'll never know.
The Ontario Teachers Pension. Anyway, we can talk about this another time. Okay. So gentlemen, first of all, thank you for coming again. We really appreciate your time here. I know everyone's busy. This was kind of short notice because we didn't know what we were going to do until last night and this morning. So let's sign off. Dean, tell people where they can find you, what you're up to, and give the handoff, buddy. Floor's all yours.
Yeah. Hit me at on Twitter at @RD_Linden and be kind.
Love it. That's a great sign off. Be kind. I would never say that, but I'm glad you did. Julian, what about you, buddy?
You just look me up on YouTube, Kinetic Finance. I do live streams on Friday. I'll probably talk about the FTX thing. Who knows what'll happen by then? CPI numbers on Thursday. How can we forget that? That'll be big.
I know. I was saying that to the group chat today. I can't believe it. It's gonna be wild, man. SB, you're last on the list here, brother. What's up over there at Woke?
Yeah, check out at the Woke Antidote. It's in the description. My name and we'll probably have a podcast at some point, but we have an archive of podcasts for you if you're interested. But we have a fun Twitter feed for you as well as occasionally a podcast.
Now, before we sign off, Joey, I just want to make note that Fetterman is absolutely blowing out Oz out of the water. He's just has a massive lead. Yeah, 7% of the votes have come in, but it's 80% are for Fetterman and less than 20% are for Oz. So it's very early on.
And I just read on my feed here that Trump's already gonna have a challenge. It's a fraud.
I love it. And Herschel Walker, he's gaining ground, 46% to 52. So it's in the third quarter right now. He's got a 75 yards rushing. He'll be rushing for 100 yards for sure this game, and we'll see if he comes out on top. It's going to be a close one.
I love it. God bless everyone. Thanks for coming. We'll talk to everybody soon.
All right. Cheers.
Take care.